What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Mike Harris, author of How to Win a Debate with an Israel Hater. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, our maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. As we near the end of 2015, it's customary to hear lots of best of lists and worst of lists for the secular year that's ending. While the Jewish New Year was way back in September, in 2016, by the way, Rosh Hashanah will actually be in October, it's still reasonable to remember a few of the top Jewish newsmakers of the past 12 months. Here are our personal Too Jewish top five Jewish newsmakers from 2015. Number 5. Iran dealmaker Wendy Sherman was the chief U.S. negotiator in the nuclear agreement with Iran and one of the few women participating in the negotiations. Wendy Sherman stepped down from the Obama administration, where she served as Undersecretary of State for Policy, the number 3 position in the department, since 2011. After the conclusion of the deal, she retired. President Obama praised Sherman's unique combination of intellect, toughness, and persistence, which have made her one of the most effective diplomats of her generation. The Iran deal was announced back on July 14th, and like it or hate it, it was the single most important Jewish story of the year. And a Jewish woman named Wendy Sherman negotiated it. Number 4. American-Israeli basketball coach David Blatt, in his first season as the Cleveland Cavaliers head coach, guided the club to the NBA Finals. They lost to the champion Golden State Warriors. Blatt, who is 56, came to Cleveland after coaching Maccabi Tel Aviv to an unlikely EuroLeague title or two. He later coached the Russian national team. The Boston-area native played professionally in Israel, making Aliyah in 1979, and in college at Princeton. So far, David Blatt again has the LeBron James-led Cavs near the top of the league as we near the midway point of the NBA season. Number 3, inspired by her own father coming out as a transgender guy in 2011. Number 3, Jewish newsmaker of the year, inspired by her own father coming out as transgender in 2011, TV producer-writer Jill Soloway, who is 49 years old, created Transparent, one of the most acclaimed shows of 2015. Perhaps the most obviously Jewish show ever on TV, the Golden Globe award-winning comedy follows the very Jewish Pfefferman family in the wake of its patriarch announcing he is becoming a woman. The series, which features a female rabbi character, has been at the forefront of a larger transgender awareness in America and in the world this year. Number 2 Jewish newsmaker of the year, Shalom Jon Stewart. The announcement that The Daily Show host Jon Stewart was stepping down devastated his many fans, a lot of them Jewish. Nominated in July for an Emmy, the unabashedly liberal Stewart, born Jonathan Stewart Leibovitz, presided over Comedy Central's fake news program for 16 years, during which time there were countless and many, many very funny Jewy moments. And the number 1 Jewish newsmaker of 2015, Senator Bernie Sanders. Since announcing in April that he would challenge frontrunner Hillary Rodham Clinton for the 2016 Democratic presidential nomination, the Vermont senator and self-described socialist, officially an independent, Bernie Sanders has become a left-wing darling. He appeals to those who see Clinton as too establishment and possessing too many negatives. The only Jewish candidate in the race, the 73-year-old Bernie Sanders, born in Brooklyn and raised there, is proud of his Jewish background, which he says sparked his interest in politics. Sanders has run a very popular campaign, drawing huge crowds and lots of young people, and is currently polling at a surprising 32% to Hillary Clinton's 54%. Those were our top five Jewish newsmakers of 2015. How do you respond to anti-Israel propaganda when it erupts from somebody near you? And what's the best way to deal with the flow of anti-Israel and often anti-Semitic verbiage launched in a discussion or from a podium? Find out how to successfully answer the anti-Israel advocates from our guest, Mike Harris, when we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Dr. Michael Harris is the author of a new book, Winning a Debate with an Israel Hater, How to Effectively Challenge Anti-Israel Extremists in Your Neighborhood. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
So what prompted you to write this now?
I have been involved in Israel advocacy efforts in the Bay Area for over 10 years, and that includes giving a lot of talks to pro-Israel audiences at synagogues and other groups. And what I found is that a lot of people who absolutely support Israel just don't know the information well enough to respond to many of the lies that are put out by anti-Israel activists.
I spend some time on college campuses. Is that the most difficult place now to be pro-Israel?
Probably, especially at many of the campuses in the University of California system. There's a lot of anti-Israel extremism that goes on there, and it can make it a very difficult environment for many of our students.
What is your overall instruction to people when confronted with someone who is bringing a roster of complaints about Israel?
The first thing is to realize that if you're dealing with a hardcore anti-Israel activist, you are not going to change this person's mind. And your audience in the discussion is actually the people that are around and watching the interaction. Those are the people you're trying to reach. And so what you say and how you conduct yourself is all towards the end of giving those people a different perspective on the issue than they're hearing from the anti-Israel extremists.
Is it important not to get upset?
Absolutely. You want to have not only the moral high ground of supporting peace, but you want to have the rhetorical high ground. I have a section called The Five Commandments of Successful Advocacy that talks about how you can frame the discussion in a way that you really claim the high ground on both of those counts.
Does it matter what the facts are in one of these discussions?
It does. You're not going to be able to fact check on the fly, but it's very, very important that we stick to what we know is true. true, and more importantly, that we're able to rebut lies on the other side. For example, that 5 million descendants of Arab refugees from Israel's War of Independence have a right under international law to return to Israel and change it from a Jewish state into an Arab state. You have to know the facts to be able to rebut that.
We will talk much more with Michael Harris, find out what the five commandments are in debating with an anti-Israel spokesperson or an Israel hater when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have three stores. We're opening a fourth in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kfel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, TOO Jewish Radio 18, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our Mavina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So you have been in Israel, about every week for the last couple of months. Your most recent trip, I wanted to ask you, with all of the stabbing attacks, the car attacks, what has that done to the mood in the country and your experience of it?
I was part of a group, of course. So we were 30 people, 10 from Tucson and the rest of them from other places in the United States. And I was, surprisingly, felt very secured. And we spent like 5 days in Jerusalem, and we walked from our hotel to the old city many times. And all this time we felt like, you know, at least I never like just looked back or felt. It was only one time on Friday afternoon where the group had like a free time, and I used this time to go and pay Shiva call in Jerusalem, in Kiryat Yovel. And I was walking like near Mamila, just looking for a cab, and it was like four cabs that stopped, you know, that I stopped, and then it is. As soon as that I heard the Arab accent, I said, no, thank you. Oh. And it was very hard for me because I always try not to judge all of them. I try to, you know...
look at people as individuals.
That's the first time that I felt, yeah, it's really affect me that I'm not feeling secure enough to go with an Arab driver. And also because I was alone. Maybe if we were two or three, I was more... And then I walked like almost 40 minutes, I think, or a little bit less to Dan Panorama, and then I felt
secure. Yeah, from Amila to Dan Panorama was at least a half hour walk.
So, and then I just, you know, it was a cab, so I was, I felt secure to take this cab. And I told, and we talked, actually every place is in Jerusalem, I tried to ask the Israelis how they feel.
Yeah.
And I asked him, and he's 55 years a cab driver in Jerusalem.
Gosh.
So, you know, and he said, yeah, it's another, you know, we had lots of these
We've
crises.
We've had lots of problems
yeah,
over the years.
55 years.
Yeah.
So, of course.
Perspective.
Yeah, it's a huge perspective. And then I told him the, you know, the story, and he said, you know what, I will wait for you. And he waited for me 40 minutes that he didn't charge. An Israeli
cab driver who didn't charge
didn't
you waiting
charge me
time.
For the waiting.
This is a miracle.
Yeah. But he also told me about like a very good relationship that he still keep with his Arab colleagues, I would say, which is
sure.
give me, you know,
a
moment before Shabbat, give me a little bit hope. But as I say, hope is not a strategy.
Hope is not a strategy, but we also hope not to lose it.
Nachon.
Thanks, Oshrat.
We'll
talk next secular year.
Toda rabba.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174. Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Gero Psych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about refugees and immigrants. Jews have been refugees to the United States, going back to Sephardic refugees who came to the New World, then the German refugees fleeing all the revolutions in Germany and persecution there, and then all of the Ashkenazic refugees who came from Russia, and then, in the 20th century and the 21st century, refugees from crises in the former Soviet Union and France and lots of other places. Let's explore that Jewish experience a little bit.
Right. I think with the vast, vast majority of American Jews, depending on their age, I mean, at my age, it's grandparents, and my students at the university, it's their great-grandparents usually, but sometimes it's great-great-great-grandparents. But if you go back far enough, most Jews in America are the descendants of refugees who came to this country mostly from somewhere in Europe, and mostly because they were persecuted in one way or another. Either they were kept out of schools or kept out of good jobs or kept out of, deprived of equal housing opportunity, whatever. Or they were victims of pogroms. I mean, the vast, huge emigration from the Tsarist Empire that started at the end of the 1880s and didn't really conclude till the eve of World War I was caused by a series of pogroms. To which the then Russian government, this was pre-Soviet, let me stress, it was
Tsarist government.
Right. The Russian government at the time responded to these pogroms, which it had sponsored and organized. They were state-sponsored, not popular uprisings, by making the Jewish communities pay for the damages that had been done by Russian troops.
Right, or Cossacks or whomever. Right.
When Jews realized that there was little to no future for them in the Tsarist Empire, they basically did one of three things. They either resolved to move to the West in steps, first maybe Eastern Europe or Central Europe, then maybe Western Europe, and then finally the New World, or they decided in smaller numbers to move to Israel, which was then Palestine. It was a province of the Ottoman Empire. It was not yet a British-mandated place, and it certainly was not yet the State of Israel. But a lot of people who moved to Israel and were the founding mothers and fathers moved as a result of that series of pogroms. Or they resolved to bring down the Tsarist government and to transform Russia into a some kind of new, either democratic or socialistic or communistic place. So a lot of, ultimately, those responsible for the Russian Revolution were Jews who'd been persecuted. But the point remains that the vast majority of American Jews are descended from people who fled that wave of persecution. And it was very specific in the 1880s. And I would say for them or their descendants to question, even briefly, welcoming refugees to this country who are fleeing from some horribly oppressive state is just unthinkable.
Yeah, well, and for many of us, it is unthinkable. And for others, it's remarkably hypocritical. You know, we all came here for those reasons. And thank God that we could. Or the persecution, or ultimately the Holocaust, would have killed so even more.
Right.
I want to thank you, Tom. We will talk not only next week, but in the next secular year.
I look forward to it.
Thanks. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, the head of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John. Boker Tov.
Boker Or.
And almost, should I say, L'Shana Tova?
Right. Happy Secular New Year.
L'Chilonim, like Happy Secular New Year.
Where did that year go? Crazy.
Yeah, very fast. It gets faster and faster. I hate to tell you, you're not as old as I am. So, Jewish New Year, we know Rosh Hashanah, great values, return, repentance, repair. Secular New Year, not quite the same.
You know, it's an interesting question because it kind of brings to mind that song, Auld Lang Syne, right? And while the Jews are a few months ahead of the rest of Western culture in terms of digging deep and soul searching and looking for ways to be better, everybody else seems to do that a little bit on December 31st if they have, you know, enough capacity to be thinking along those lines. I'm only saying that because there's so much celebration that goes on. And
Machta L'chaim.
Right.
There's a little bit of champagne that night.
But it does also provide that opportunity to think about life and where you want to go in the next year.
So one of the interesting aspects of this end of the year period, there's a couple of days left in it, is the sort of charitable impulse that it brings out. Some of that is people wanting to do good things for other people in the holiday season. Some of it is the way the IRS tax code works.
Right. Well, I love that you're bringing that up because, of course, this time of year is the high season for donations to the JETCO campaign. And the JETCO campaign is a way to direct your tax dollars straight to Jewish education. The beneficiary organizations are the Anti-Israel Kindergarten Program and, of course, Tucson Hebrew Academy.
And that's a tax credit, which people may know, instead of, it's not, you get a deduction on the federal, but
it's a straight tax credit. Exactly. What every dollar that you contribute comes right off your state taxes.
So here's a tricky question, maybe a sensitive one, maybe not. What percentage of students in, say, Tucson Hebrew Academy or other day schools receive financial assistance to be able to go?
It's an important question because it's thanks to the community that we're able to have a community Jewish day school. So over 2/3 of our kids receive some sort of scholarship benefit from JETCO.
So it's tremendously helpful.
It's not only tremendously helpful, it's essential.
The coming back to the whole question of New Year's. So if you were going to make a new, this notion of New Year's resolutions, right? So what would your New Year's resolution be from a Jewish educational perspective?
It's a great question. And, you know, I'm always thinking about how to do better in the world and how to perform better in the workplace and how to make school a better place. And so I think for me, an important resolution is continuing to work on personal best, continuing to work on serving the community well, so that we have a strong legacy in front of us as the generations continue.
That's a great message and a great way to finish the year. Thanks, John. We will talk next secular year.
Happy New Year.
When we come back, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week here on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students, a rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is set for May 29th to June 9th, 2016. If you're interested in going on this fantastic journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18@gmail.com, tojewishradio18@gmail, or call 520-327-4501 for more information and an itinerary. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Yossi thought it would be nice to bring his wife a little gift. How about some perfume? He asked the cosmetics clerk named Rivka. She showed him a bottle costing $50. That's a little much, says Yossi. She returns with a smaller bottle for $30. That's still quite a bit, Yossi complains. A little annoyed, the clerk, Rivka, brings out a tiny $15 bottle. What I mean, says Yossi, I'd like to see something really cheap. So the clerk hands him a mirror. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This year, the first Shabbat in January coincides with the reading of a great portion of Torah. It happens to be my personal favorite section, the portion of Shemot, beginning of the book of Exodus, because it was my own bar mitzvah portion. As you know, we chant the whole Torah over the course of a year in the synagogue, dividing the reading up into a series of weekly portions that begin with the start of Genesis in the fall and continue through the conclusion of Deuteronomy the following autumn. Now, you would think that since we have had the Torah with us for at least 2.5 millennia, 2,500 years, and some would say 3,200 years, no part of the Torah belongs to any one Jew. But when you spend a solid year or 2 years studying one section of the Torah, as our bar and bat mitzvah kids do, and when you do so at 11 or 12 years of age, you start to feel like this portion is not only special to you, but also kind of belongs to you. It becomes your Torah portion, as though you were the first and only Jew ever to come so close to it. Although as a rabbi and cantor, I have studied many Torah portions and have immersed myself in the texts and commentaries of each of the weekly sedras for, the many years since my bar mitzvah, at some level, I still feel that way about the weekly portion of Shemot. There are many reasons for this. First, I really did spend about 2 years studying this section with my father, Rabbi and cantor Baruch Kohan, and he is a great teacher. In the course of that time, I came to nearly memorize the 124 verses in the portion and to know the ins and outs of many of the commentaries on this parsha. And while all of this happened some 42 years ago, there was an annual opportunity to review and re-explore my portion, since nearly every year I would chant the whole portion in the synagogue. But the most important reason that Shemot has continued to be such an important source of interest and inspiration, and of course, my Torah portion, is that the text itself of this first portion of the book of Exodus is fabulous. It's filled with outstanding stories that are both dramatic and exceptionally important. Shemot begins with the Israelites living well in Egypt. Then a new king arises who knew not Joseph. The people are enslaved. Moses is born, and the fabulous tale of slavery, redemption, and freedom begins to play itself out. Nearly from birth, Moses is simply the most interesting and important person in the Torah, and perhaps in all of world religion. He's courageous, forthright, humble, hot-tempered, persistent, chutzpahdik, in every way a very human hero. At the start of the most important section of this week's portion, Moses is herding sheep in the wilderness when he comes upon a famous bush. Sne bo'er bo'esh v'hasne nenu ukal. The bush burned with a furious flame, but was unconsumed. God appears to Moses out of that flame, instructing him to stand up for his people, go back to Egypt, the Egypt he fled as a fugitive, and try to liberate the enslaved Israelites. To put it mildly, Moses is reluctant. He argues he's not worthy. He says no one will believe him. He tells God he stutters. He comes up with a wide variety of reasons he shouldn't go back. When God answers each of his objections with a solution, Moses eventually concludes by simply refusing to go. God, however, has a certain power to persuade. And of course, this being the Torah, our primary religious text, God is right. By the end of the portion, Moses finds himself back in Egypt. His first efforts to liberate the people rebuffed, he himself already discredited in his quest to free his people from domination. The growth of Moses into a protean figure who redeems the Israelites will take two more weekly portions. But the lesson here in Shemot is that if God chooses a course for you, no matter what your personal feelings, you should probably go along for the ride. For one way or another, your direction in life has been selected. All the rest is commentary. Or perhaps the lesson is even greater. Many times our reluctance to accept a sacred task, to do what we are urged to do, is simply a combination of obstinacy and fear. We know we should choose to take a new course in life, embrace hope and promise over the familiar and ordinary failures, but our own inertia holds us back. May the burning bush illumine a new path for us in this new secular year of 2016, as it did for Moses so long ago. One more personal note. 11 months ago, I stood at the foot of Mount Sinai and saw what the monks at St. Catherine's Monastery there say is the very bush that Moses saw burning but not consumed 3,250 years ago. While the identification of that shrub seems exceedingly unlikely, even the location of Sinai itself is in some doubt, the continued power of this tale teaches us a further lesson. The meaning of a narrative is often more powerful than the specifics of the facts. Our own narratives, too, our own life stories can have deep meaning, whether or not the facts of our personal accomplishments seem so to others. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Mike Harris, will help us learn how best to respond to those who would attack Israel. Find out when we return in a moment here on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998 and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The public prosecutor in Berlin charged two men, both of whom are believed to have been animated by Islamic State, with planning an attack on Israel's embassy and another Israeli institution between December 2014 and July 2015. Tobiah Kani, a spokesman for Berlin's criminal court, said last week, both of the men are Berlin-born, but of Palestinian background. The prosecution in Berlin opened its case against Mohammed L.N. and Ali L.I., both of whom are 21 years old and whose names are being partially suppressed by the German government in accordance with its rules. The men are charged with planning a massive act of violence. Islamic State was a model for Ali, according to Kani. He added that both men were inspired by internet stories about ISIS. The men did not have direct contact with the Middle East or Salafist circles in Berlin. Kani said the men assembled the explosives for fun. According to the criminal complaint, both men put together munitions similar to those used in the terror attacks in Tunisia. Ali approved of Islamic State terror attacks and was fascinated by ISIS's terror attacks in Tunisia in June at a resort hotel. The authorities uncovered Islamic State propaganda on his mobile telephone. According to the state prosecutor, Ali was determined to detonate explosives targeting Israel's embassy or another Israeli institution. In other news last week, the UN International Atomic Energy Agency voted to close its investigation into Iran's past military nuclear work, ending a decade-long quest for answers to the true nature of Tehran's controversial nuclear program. The decision by the 35-nation Board of Governors allows the nuclear watchdog to turn its focus now to the full implementation and verification of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which prohibits the resumption of such nuclear weapons-related activities and provides comprehensive tools for deterring and detecting any renewed nuclear weapons work, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. The JCPOA, that is a mouthful, the Comprehensive Nuclear Accord reached by Iran and a variety of world powers in July, is intended to cap Iran's nuclear work and allow for strict international monitoring in exchange for sanctions relief. Alongside the deal, the IAEA and Iran agreed on a roadmap towards the conclusion of its investigation, a prerequisite for implementation of the deal itself. That roadmap granted the IAEA increased access to key materials and facilities in Iran this last fall, leading to a December 2nd agency report that found that Tehran had conducted activities consistent with weaponization work over the course of several years. What a shock! Much of that work ended upon the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, the IAEA Director General assessed. With that report, the board found it acceptable to conclude the investigation. Closing the possible military dimensions agenda item will in no way preclude the IAEA from investigating if there is reason to believe Iran is pursuing any covert nuclear activities in the future, as it has in the past, Kerry said. In fact, the JCPOA, by providing for implementation and the additional protocol, as well as other enhanced transparency, puts the International Agency on Nuclear Stuff in a far better position to pursue any future concerns that may arise, Kerry added. Israel is not convinced. Israel's foreign ministry responded to the IAEA report, saying that it clearly indicates once again Iran has conducted a coordinated effort to develop a nuclear device, including activities that took place after 2003. For over a decade, Iran has been non-cooperative and deceptive. According to a statement issued by the ministry, serious doubts and outstanding issues regarding Iran's program still remain. Yuval Steinitz, National Infrastructure, Energy and Water Minister, called the decision political, resulting from pressure from powers that brokered the JCPOA. The decision made today was political and not practical, he said. For this reason, it sends the wrong message to the Iranians that the international community is willing to look the other way. Predictably, AIPAC, the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which aggressively lobbied against the deal, condemned the vote as a deplorable development. The IAEA is closing this file even after discovering further suspicious evidence and experiencing additional Iranian obstinacy. In Iran, the country's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, praised the vote as a development towards the end of sanctions on the Islamic Republic. The resolution goes far beyond closing the issues of so-called PMD and cancels the 12 previous resolutions of the Council of Governors of the IAEA, which seriously restricted our country's nuclear programs, Zarif said. Iran is undertaking the preparatory steps to get ready for what is called Implementation Day. Not a specific set date on the calendar, but the date on which all commitments by Iran are satisfactorily met. Dismembering much of its nuclear infrastructure, deconstruction of its plutonium reactor at Arak, and the installation of monitoring equipment, among other steps. However, within hours of the IAEA vote, UN officials warned that Iran may have violated a separate set of international laws by conducting yet more ballistic missile tests. The EMAD rocket that Iran tested October 10th was a ballistic missile capable of delivering a nuclear warhead. That is a violation of the UN Security Council resolution, a team of sanctions monitors said in a confidential new report. On the basis of its analysis and findings, the panel concludes that the EMAD launch is a violation by Iran of paragraph 9 of Security Council Resolution 1929, for those of you keeping score at home. In response, the White House said it would not rule out additional punitive steps toward Iran that were consistent with U.S. national security. However, the Obama administration did not elaborate. More Iran mess. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Dr. Michael Harris has a new book, Winning a Debate with an Israel Hater, How to Effectively Challenge Anti-Israel Extremists in Your Neighborhood, or your college campus, or your public speaking group, or whichever place you find them. Michael, tell me a little bit about sort of your qualifications in preparing this book.
Sure. I really became involved in Israel advocacy around the launch of Arafat's terror war after the failed Camp David summit, and then especially in the San Francisco Bay Area with the run-up to the Iraq War. It turned out that the groups that were leading this so-called anti-war effort, and I say so-called, actually were in full support of Hamas and Hezbollah attacks on Israel, and they insisted on forcing their anti-Israel extremism into the anti-war effort. So a number of us in the Bay Area came together and said, we need to stand in opposition to this. And so we coalesced, we started doing public counter demonstrations, started to be able to build a group that way. And then as part of my own efforts, I went around and started talking to synagogues, to churches, to senior citizen groups, talking about Israel and educating people about Israel. And so as a result of that effort, really finding out what it was that people didn't know and what was necessary to respond to a lot of the lies and misinformation that the other side is putting out.
What are the five commandments for debating with an anti-Israel person?
Sure. Well, the first one is tell the truth, or at least don't knowingly lie. And this is important not only when you're talking with someone, and again, people who are listening, if they're really interested, they may want to go back and look and read further on this issue. And when you're dealing with someone in an online encounter, anything you post on Facebook, on Twitter, any other social media site, really stays up there for an eternity. So you don't want to make unforced errors of fact there. And so it's very important that we stick to what we know is right. But that's why it's also important that people on our side educate themselves as to what those facts are. The second one is avoiding ad hominem attacks, which basically comes down to don't say that the person that you're debating with is an idiot, even when he actually happens to be one. You know, we have enough facts on our side that we don't have to resort to that. And also, I really devote an entire chapter of the book to when it's appropriate to use the label of anti-Semite when talking with somebody. It's not something that you really want to use reflexively. The other side likes to claim, oh, every time we criticize Israel, you just claim it's anti-Semitism. Well, you know, in point of fact, it often is, but it's a term that we have to be careful about using. The third one is don't generalize. Avoid overly broad statements such as all Palestinians are supporters of terrorists. Do too many of them support it? Absolutely. But again, you want to be able to blame the Palestinian leadership for not making peace with Israel. You can't blame every single Palestinian in the street for that. The fourth one is don't distort. Don't claim that every anti-Israel activist is supporting the most extreme agenda, which is Hamas and its calls for genocide. You know, what I write in the book is there are ample ways to counter anti-Israel arguments without accusing every Israel boycotter of secretly holding a Friends of Hamas membership card, although some of them might. And finally, the last one is use positive language. This is really important. The other side basically likes to hide the jargon of jihad behind the language of liberalism. They use phrases, they use human rights language to try to advocate against Israel. And so we can use similarly positive terms. There's a really, really excellent Israel educator and advocate in Israel named Neil Lazarus, and I've really learned a lot from him. He says that when possible, you want to use the words hope, peace, children, and future in statements that you make. So we want to incorporate those. For example, we hope that the Palestinian leadership will return to the negotiating table because Israelis want a future of peace, not only for their children, but for Palestinian children as well.
In these debates, which often are not formalized. I mean, as a rabbi, sometimes I find myself on a panel or in a circumstance where I know I'm going to be in these kinds of discussions, but most of these discussions don't really happen that way. They happen in conversation. Is it best sometimes to avoid the situation?
Well, it depends. You know, if you're in a situation where, let's say, it's just you and there's a whole bunch of members of your, you know, local chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine or the radically misnamed Jewish Voice for Peace, and there aren't people around to listen to the discussion, the people that you're really trying to reach, your actual audience, there's really not much point in that. So, you know, when these discussions happen, be they on a college campus, be they in a public setting, it depends, you know, is it worth your time to do it? If there are people around who are interested in listening to what both sides have to say, yes, then it may be worth it. If it's just, you know, you and one other person who's really, you know, is unmovable, hardcore anti-Israel, don't waste your time. You've got better things to do.
Let's talk about the BDS movement a bit, which has mostly been characterized by ineffectiveness in the United States, although perhaps a little bit of a rising effort, but quite serious impact at times in Europe. Whether or not it's really affected Israel's economy or not is very debatable. How would you characterize the BDS movement? What's the right way to respond to it?
Sure, and BDS basically really is at its core the same anti-Israel activism dressed up in fancier language. You know, it's really the same old BS, just hold the D. And BDS, if you really analyze it, what it does at its heart is insist through advocating for the fictional right of return for 5 million descendants of Palestinian refugees from 48, it insists that Israel no longer remain the state of the Jewish people. So its goal, in the end, isn't really any different from the goal of Hamas or the goal of Iran. They may promote less violent ways to do it, but they still seek the same end result. And it's very, very important to expose that. So I get to really a statement that I think is really what allows you to expose the BDS agenda. And it's a very simple one. You go up to anybody who's promoting BDS and you say, so, I support genuine peace between the Jewish state of Israel and a future Arab state of Palestine. What about you? And And anybody who is promoting the BDS movement really has no choice but to say no. And sometimes they'll use weasel words like, oh, well, I support equal rights for everyone. But what they don't support is the right of the Jewish people to our own nation state in at least a portion of our own homeland.
Are there points that people make in these debates? You use the title Israel hater. Are there, when they make legitimate points, the Palestinians have a right to live in peace and security. What's the best way to respond?
Absolutely. I would say yes. On this we agree. But what you clearly don't seem to agree with me on, as you say to the person you're discussing with, is you don't seem to agree that the Jewish people also have a right to live in peace and security in their own nation state. So you and I agree on the first part, but I'm the only one who's supporting those rights for the Jewish people. There's no problem with agreeing with legitimate points the other side makes. And there can absolutely be legitimate criticism of Israel. You know, when I talk about Israel haters, I'm talking about people who don't accept Israel's right to exist within any borders at all.
So the latest major effort has been this concept of one state for Arabs and Jews between the Mediterranean and, who knows, maybe the Jordan River, maybe Iraq. What's the best response to the people who say, well, this is only fair, it should be a democratic state for all of the peoples that live in the area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you say, great, let's look around the region. How well are Arab Muslims living with each other in places like Iraq and Syria and Libya? You know, what's going on in those countries? Show me a country where Sunnis and Shiites, if they are in reasonably large numbers, are getting along well and living in peace with each other. Show me where in the Arab world minorities such as Christians and Yazidis are safe before you take away the rights of the Jewish people to live in our own state, in our homeland. And if you look around the region, you know, of course, we know exactly what's going on there. And you can, of course, also bring up the fate of the Jews from Arab countries who ended up being a larger number of refugees than the Arab refugees from Israel's War of Independence. And these Jews from Arab countries, of course, as we all know, were not engaged in a war of attempted genocide against their neighbors. They were harassed, their property was confiscated, they were expelled, they fled, and there were more of them than there were of Palestinian refugees. So the fate of Jews as a minority anywhere in the Arab Middle East would be very, very tenuous. So, you know, if you like what's going on in Syria, if you like what's going on in Iraq, if you enjoyed the Bosnian Civil War, then you'll really like what we like to call the one-state final solution.
The anti-Israel movement is particularly strong where you're from in the San Francisco Bay Area. The Jewish Film Festival has sometimes been called the anti-Jewish film festival there. Talk a little bit about why it seems to be that the Bay Area has so many pro-Palestinian, not just pro-Palestinian, but really anti-Israel groups.
Sure. And the Reut Institute in Tel Aviv, I think it was 10 years ago, they labeled five areas around the world as what they described as hubs of delegitimization of Israel. And they were Madrid, Brussels, London, Toronto, and the San Francisco Bay Area. So we were the only place in the United States given such a designation. Unfortunately, it is well-deserved. And it's somewhat paradoxical because the Bay Area is thought of as a place of tolerance. You know, if you look around, certainly for LGBT people, for other minorities, the Bay Area has a reputation of acceptance. So it is really quite startling that the one group that isn't really accepted well here is supporters of Israel. And, you know, why is it that way? People who are well above my pay grade on this have looked at that. A lot of it has to do with far leftist politics, and a lot of it has to do with just who happens to be in this area. And we do have just a huge number of anti-Israel groups that are located here, and a very, very large number of anti-Israel activists as well.
I want to thank Dr. Michael Harris for a great visit here on Two Jewish. His book is called Winning a Debate with an Israel Hater. Where can people go to find out about the book and to pick it up?
It is available on Amazon. And also there's a Facebook page for the book. If you go to Facebook, just look for Winning a Debate with an Israel Hater.
Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9. Our guest will be Rabbi Mary Zamor, Executive Director of the Women's Rabbinic Network, the only organization of woman rabbis in the world. Our play out this morning on Two Jewish for the coming secular new year is from cantor and tenor David Dudu Fisher, a past guest of Two Jewish. It's called Shana Tova, a good new year. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a good secular new year, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Shana Tovah.